I found this in Ganner room. Ganner mirror at me.
What is it?
Well, it's
Sick Performance.
Welcome to Synthaholics, guys. This is your host, David Duncan. And this week, we're doing something a little bit different. This episode will be recordings from various interviews that I did throughout the week, kind of as an in memoriam for the passing of Leonard Nimoy, since last week it was just about a year ago that he had passed away. So, I just wanted to go ahead and give this little intro before I start the interviews, so you know kind of what's going on here. So, I hope you enjoy this.
This is David with Victoria Schmidt, right?
Yep.
With Victoria Schmidt, are also known as Scruffy Rupple, the cosplayer, online, on social media. You can find her under Scruffy Rupple. She recently did a Spock Leonard Nimoy shoot where she was kind of embodying some of the work that he did as a photographer, as well as the character of Spock or the Vulcans in general. So welcome.
Thank you.
With that shoot, I was very inspired by it. Have you always been a fan of Nimoy? Has he been someone who's been there for you your whole life, or did you kind of discover him later in life?
Definitely the latter, which I feel bad about. I mean, for me, Star Trek was definitely always TOS. But I'm a Kurt girl. Like, I have girlfriends who are just love Spock, and I'm like, Spock's cool, but I'm all for Captain Kirk. But there was something about Nimoy, you know, near the end of his life, and you know, getting to see him in the Abrams movies and stuff, realized I just really loved and appreciated this man that had spent obviously 50 years in the franchise, you know, far more than even Shatner had.
Yeah, and as the same character, although it wasn't for Shatner's lack of trying, though.
Exactly. But just, you know, he's got this just entire grace and wisdom about him. And then, you know, when I would, I never followed him on Twitter, but I remember like reading about just all the massive warmth and inclusivity he had for people, like being their honorary grandpa and stuff like that. And I was just, it's just so amazing. And there's like no words to put on, like, to describe the kind of man he obviously was and how much, you know, you didn't have to be into Star Trek for him to affect your life if you were aware of him.
Sure.
I just found all of that so touching. And then when, you know, he passed away, that was just, you know, basically every friend I knew kind of,
that was
obviously a terrible time for them.
It was heartbreaking. I was at work and I was crying pretty much most of the day.
Yeah, and it's just like you knew something very, very important was now missing from Star Trek. And again, like I love Shatner and Kirk, but I don't, like, I'll be sad when Shatner, hopefully not for a long, long time, but when he passes away. But they're obviously like the soul of Star Trek seemed to kind of lose its sails when Nimoy passed on.
Oh, yeah.
I think that hurt everyone extra.
Yeah, he represented it so much, and he had so much gravitas and knowledge of it, and, you know, he would say no if he didn't like the script. I mean, like, he was mm-hmm. he was supposed to be in Generations, and he didn't show up in Generations, and,
yeah.
he felt the J.J. Abrams movies was good enough for him to be able to show up in, so, I mean, it says a lot, I think, to his character, and that how he has respect for the property he worked on for, you know, mm-hmm. almost his entire life.
Oh, yeah, and then the way that, you know, Quinto and sorry, it's my neighbor's dog. How Quinto and like Pine would talk about him on set. Like, you know, these are talented young men, but they were so changed and inspired by the amount of time they spent with him, which I think is just really that speaks so much to how he was always impacting people's lives, even in his emeritus years.
Oh, I'm sure. Like, I mean, I just can't imagine being Quinto and just being there, like, you're getting coached to be Spock by the man himself. Like, that
yes.
is, like, I mean, like, the honor of playing Spock alone, I'm sure, is mind-blowing. But then having, like, getting coached by Spock is, I'm sure that must have been an amazing life event for him.
Just intimidating something else, you know? And he talks about, I guess, how he didn't really have a father figure. And in whatever amount of time he spent with Nimoy, like, that Nimoy became this pivotal example of a father figure to him and, like, taught him so much in the time he spent with him. And I remember, obviously, this year being the one-year anniversary, there was a lot of questions thrown at him and Pine in terms of their memories of him. But I guess the one I saw floating around a lot, which was just, I think, sums everything up, was the time that the two of them saw him asleep in his Spock makeup on set, mm-hmm. and he was, like, snoring, and just the two of them being like, there's Spock, oh my god, there's Spock, and he's, like, sleeping and he's snoring, and it's like, you know, it's these two kids, these two amazingly talented actors, but in that moment they're obviously two kids who are just like, oh my god, there's Spock, you know?
Oh yeah.
And that's like their favorite, one of their favorite memories of him, which I think kind of sums up everything.
Oh, that's definitely an awesome experience and an awesome memory to share. But you said you didn't grow up with Spock, and you kind of came to him a little bit later. Do you remember what your first memory of Spock is, or Leonard Nimoy in general?
Just that he'd always been there. Like, the same for, I'm terrible when it comes to, like, I never have, like, that, I was five and this thing came on TV. It was just, I'd always known TOS. When all of my friends were getting into Next Gen, I was flipping the channel to, like, Nick at Night or wherever they were showing TOS reruns, because that was the Star Trek that I found exciting, mm-hmm. and just loving the relationship between Kirk and Spock, but then not seeing the movies until I was probably in college, and then having to cope with Wrath of Khan and stuff like that.
Oh, speaking of Wrath of Khan, have you been able to watch it since his passing? Because, I mean, that was hard to see even before he passed.
Right? Yeah. I know I watched it, like, definitely after he passed. Maybe even too soon after he passed. Because, of course, like, that's what TV does, you know? TV's like, who died? All right, let's put all their movies on. And then, so I remember Wrath of Khan playing a lot. And I watch Wrath of Khan and then kind of skip that part most of the time now. Like, I already was kind of inclined to skip that part, just because I don't want to cry every time I watch a movie. But now it's like, I just need to fast forward and get to the end. I already know what happened. Let me just, like, jump to Search for Spock so I can be happy again by the end of that.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, like, almost the eulogy is almost even sadder than seeing mm-hmm. him die. Just, like, because,
yeah.
I mean, like, Shatner's a great actor, but, like, I think that moment, those couple of lines at his funeral was, like, I believed him the most there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It breaks your heart.
Absolutely.
And you know, obviously not foreseeing the future, and yet it somehow is, like, the most perfect eulogy to give the character and the man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I would totally agree with that. So, what... I mean, obviously he was a great man. Like, what inspired you to do the photo shoot that you just recently did?
You know, at some point in the last couple of years, I'd obviously stumbled upon his photography, and obviously his new photography. And I was like, holy crap, he did new photography, because you don't expect that, especially, I think, maybe from older adults. And you're like, they're so amazing that they appreciate this on such a different level than most of the population.
Sure, sure.
And I was just fascinated by that he had all these other talents that I, you know, with my Star Trek blinders on, you know, you so often just see actors as kind of one dimensional. They're actors, you know, and it's hard to realize or understand that it's like they can have, like, multitude of talents the time they're not on screen. And so the fact that he had, like, all, like, you know, he's, like, been a photographer his entire life and had just all these other talents and loves and interests, and that obviously was a big one, and I just really loved the things he had said about, you know, photography and about the female form. And then he'd done that great full body project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which was just the coolest thing ever. And you know, body image and stuff like that. And obviously, like, as a cosplayer, that is a constant topic.
And struggle, body image, probably.
Yeah,
sure.
Body image, self-esteem, positivity, just everything connected with you feel about yourself and then how you feel about your body. And I just really appreciated that he, you know, had such respect for the female form. And it's nothing to be scary about, and it's something to love and appreciate in all of its shapes and forms, and kind of trying to find peace or acceptance, you know, within yourself. And so, like, I don't know, somewhere back in like October or November, you know, I realized, I was like, oh man, like Nimoy's 1 year anniversary is coming up, and that is like, everyone's gonna be so bummed. Like, I just know, you know it's approaching, and everyone's gonna spend all their time sharing memories, hopefully happy ones, but just being really sad. But then there was something about that where I was like, I really want to do something, not for him because he's gone, so what is he here, but just something that I maybe need to get off my chest, physically, not physically, literally, not literally, and that I hoped would reflect different parts of him that were so amazing and inspiring. And once I had seen the new photography, like, I knew that's what I wanted to do, that I wanted to do something that was personal for me and then maybe in some way personal for other Spock and Leonard Nimoy fans, which, you know, the personal part for me was pushing my comfort limits just beyond anything they'd ever done before, and using the project to find some type of self-acceptance for me. I have a generally nice body. I am aware of that. Most of my girlfriends have amazing bodies, and it's other people telling them that. And unfortunately, that's not how the mind works. I wish it did, that if someone tells you you look nice, that just your mind's like, awesome, I'm good, but it doesn't. And like, I am so saddened by how many beautiful, beautiful women I know have just the most debilitating, like, anxiety and depression and low self-esteem, low, like, body views of themselves. And as much as I love the world of cosplay, like, for me, like, I did not have issues with my body when I was younger. And it really, really came out as I became an adult, like, in college and afterwards. And a lot of that, unfortunately, is exacerbated by the hobby of cosplay, because it's all about image, you know, everyone's
image and social media and online. People can just be absolute jerks and feel like there's no repercussions on it, and that's mm-hmm. I mean, that's tough. I know it's got to be really tough.
Yeah, and it's like, sometimes you just feel bipolar, because one moment you think you're awesome, and you're like, no, I'm cool with myself, I'm okay, you know, and the next moment you're just thinking just everything's wrong, everything just, you know, it's not even in terms of like not skinny enough or not fit enough. You just look at yourself and it's just not good enough compared. It's always compared, you know, it's this ugly comparison, because everyone, you know, obviously on social media is trying to show their best selves. And I mean, this photo shoot is kind of a great example, because I was doing all sorts of twisting and turning of my body to make it
for the reflect. Lights and the silhouette.
Exactly. And the thing is, like, everyone's doing that in every photo, you know, like, I don't know how other people manage selfies, but whenever I attempt it, it takes like 50 shots
to get
and
one
then like
decent,
and then an
yeah.
hour of debating which one, and then choosing which filter to use with the hope that it doesn't look like too much of a filter has been used. You know, everyone just spends so much time on image, and obviously this is going to bear all in all the ways. What I really wanted to do about it was that I knew when I had the idea that I automatically was not going to be in the shape I wanted. I knew that because I had been working out for a year last year, and, like, eating great, and just, and that helped a lot towards, like, self-esteem and body image. But unfortunately, just, like, the excuse of life got in the way, and it, I hadn't worked out or eaten well since, like, April. And I certainly knew, I was like, even planning a photo shoot like this, where I'm going to be, like, buck naked, is not somehow going to inspire me to work out like crazy over the next, like, 3 months. And I didn't, totally didn't, you know, started running, that promptly stopped. But that was kind of the point. It was, it was that it, because it didn't even matter if, like, I hadn't stopped working out, because I was still going to find something, you know, you were still going to find something wrong. This isn't maybe quite toned enough. This isn't quite tight enough. Just something was going to be wrong. And it was like, that's okay. Like, and better it be now, when maybe I haven't worked out and it's on purpose, that I'm never going to feel ready about it. I'm always going to feel like there's something wrong, and I need to, like, just love and embrace and deal with it. You know, this is my body, for better or for worse. And for me personally, you know, it's that self-acceptance of, I personally, like, fluctuate. Like, working out and then not working out is nothing new. Like, I've been doing that for, like, the last 5 to 10 years. It's just who I am. And so some years I'm going to be in, like, super great shape, and some years I might look it to people, obviously with clothes on, but I know, you know, I'm the one looking at myself every day. I know when I've let something slide.
Sure.
Or yeah. I'm just not feeling good about myself, and that is okay. And that's kind of what this photo shoot was going to represent. And then just tying that in, obviously, with Nimoy's photography and his kind of appreciation of the body in all its shapes and forms, that, you know, it's beautiful no matter what. And we kind of have to, like, love and accept and conquer it. But the only way I would feel comfortable doing something like that, you know, like, obviously as a fan and specifically, like, as a cosplayer, when I'm super passionate about something, I express it through a creation, you know, through usually a costume, but sometimes it's like an inspired photo shoot. That's how I feel comfortable. So, like never in a million years would I, like, do a photo shoot of just me in the buff, you know, artistically. Like, no, the only way I'm going to do it is to tie it in with something that makes sense to me
as a tribute and in memoriam almost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because, and there's something obviously about Vulcans, and I'm sure to some people they're like, Vulcans would never be naked. But that's, like, kind of neither here nor there.
Or Vulcans, why would Vulcans even wear clothes? They're logical. What logical purpose does clothes
exactly
have? If you're not, you know, welding, you might want to wear some clothes.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
they wear a lot of clothes and robes, and I'm like,
they do. I'm like, is that logical? Other than, you know,
like, I look at what they're wearing, I think they seem awfully
warm for a desert planet.
Yeah, warmed off and very closed in almost like a Catholic robe monastery, like, sense, which is spiritual and mystical and all that. But I was like,
and they look pretty cool, but, like,
they do.
But it's just, they're on a desert planet. I mean, like,
yeah,
I don't. It just seems like really uncomfortable. It looks
like
cool.
If anyone should be, like, I don't know, neutral or understand the just nonsensicalness of being a little weird about nudity, it should be Vulcans, because for them it should be like clothes, no clothes, it doesn't matter. Like,
yeah, I could see them not caring at all, you know.
Yeah, and I just like this idea of this kind of spiritual, pure sense of a Vulcan, like, especially when, obviously, in Search for Spock, when they're at the temple and there's the Vulcan, I think they're just acolytes, just the little, like, random row of ladies that are carrying Spock over. Like, they're in these white sheer gowns, which I remember looking up, and it's like they had new bodysuits and then they had, like, a sheer white dress over it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, the most, like, uncovered I've ever seen a Vulcan, but I really love the way they look, because there was something spiritual and mystical about it, and there was more of their body showing. I just really thought that was thought that was great. I kind of wish there would be more of that in the movies, like not so covered up.
Well, maybe we'll get that with the CBS All Access stuff. Maybe make Star Trek slightly more adulty. I mean, that's kind of what I was hoping. I mean, Enterprise kind of like flaunted that a little bit, trying to make it a little bit more racy, but they were still on regular network television. They can only do so much. So I'm kind of hoping that they'll be able to like do more like HBO type stuff. I mean, I don't want it to be like Game of Thrones every single episode, but
boobs.
But I mean, if there needs to be like a Klingon like cutting someone's throat and it being like gory, they have the option of doing an episode that could be gory.
You actually see the blood, or
yeah, or you know, if there's, you know, nudity needed for some reason, like, you know, you can do it. But I mean, you don't have to do it every single episode like Game of Thrones. They could, you know, do it like once or twice a season. But having the freedom to do that, I think, is going to be amazing with that CBS All Access thing. Since it
I'm super excited about that.
Yes, as am I. So, do you have a favorite Leonard Nimoy moment, like of all of this thing? Like, what, or have you met him in person? Have you gotten anything like that? Like, any kind of like, what stands out to you the most, or do you have a story of what your favorite moment?
Did we meet Leonard Nimoy in person? No, unfortunately, like, when I realized that it would be awesome to meet Nimoy in person, I think he'd already done his official, like, I'm no longer going to conventions, like, 2 years prior.
Oh, no.
And I was like, seems about right. Yes, I mean, that was basically it. And I was hoping, like, he might go to a con again, but then also, like, respecting, I was like, good for him, you know? Like, he's got his own life to live.
Sure, yeah.
And it's not going to conventions like every other month.
And he was struggling with COPD and, you know,
exactly.
And the age and everything. So, So I think having not really gotten to meet him, like, what do you have any other, like is this photography something, your highlights of him or like anything in one of the shows? Because you said you're a big TOS fan. Like, is there anything that sticks out in your mind? Like, you know, quintessential Nimoy, quintessential Spock. Like, this is what I think of when I think of Spock or Leonard Nimoy.
Definitely his photography. I love watching his development of the character of Spock through TOS. And yeah, especially when you've got like the pilot episode and so much of it is just like, that's not Spock at all yet. And just watching as it's like kind of created in front of your eyes, like watching how mannerisms that we saw in Number One actually get adopted into the character of Spock and become like his most defining traits. And I'm a sucker for a muck time when he exclaims Jim at the end. I'm like, oh my God, look at that emotion. It's like, it's so fantastic.
Yeah, that does kind of get you a little bit, where he's like excited and it comes through, then it just immediately turns back to composure.
I mean, like when T'Pau is like, live long and prosper, and he's like, I will do neither, I have killed like my captain and my friend. I'm like, oh my God, like right in the heart. Jesus, like who says those things? Like, it's so intense and serious. There's so many TOS moments that are the best, but I like lose it every time I see him in the 2009 movie when he saves young Kirk, because he looks so like beautiful and perfect, like those wrinkles and the gray hair and
almost
the
even more
ears.
Regal.
He does. He just, I mean, that is actually the Spock I like remembering now. It's like, for Shatner, for me, my favorite Kirk age is actually like Wrath of Khan Kirk. I love the way Shatner looks physically. I love his kind of curly hair. It's like darker. Like, that's my like Kirk age for me, but for some reason for Spock it's 2009 Trek.
But the thing is with Spock, he aged so subtly, like
I know,
like I mean,
gracefully, like the king.
Yeah, but I mean like he always had lines on his face, even you know, in TOS he definitely had some distinct lines on his face, which, you know, probably helped him be Spock and be that different, you know, almost alien, because he's definitely very unique looking. Like, it's
yes.
hard to mistake him for anyone for, you know, Leonard mm-hmm. Nimoy. But, and then the lines just deepened as they got older, as he got yeah. older. Like, I mean, the picture that I put on the cover for this, which I've already sent you, like, that's one of my favorite pictures of him, like, in uniform. It's black mm-hmm. and white, and his hair's still all black. Not great yet, but it's just...
But the wisdom on the face is
so great.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I definitely know what you mean about his look in 2009, where definitely regal, his hair's, you know, different, and especially whenever he's like on his knees, the way he looks up to Nero is like, come on.
Right? It's really? Like, kill me. So, like, that's really? My favorite Spock, and then yet my favorite Nimoy is, I think it's the Bruno Mars music video he did.
Oh my gosh. That is so amazing. I love that video so much. I'm not like specifically a huge fan of the song, but like I will listen to that song as many times as it takes, as long as I get to see him like just not giving a flying.
Exactly. And so it's like the beauty and regalness of like 09 Spock with that music video, and I'm like, that to me represents the awesomeness that is Nimoy, and just the range and humor and just fun he had for life, you know.
I don't know, like that is a close second to me for the that car commercial he did with Quinto, where they're having that race
to get to the
golf course, because like the only reason why this tops the Bruno Mars song is because he sits there, he sings the Ballad of Bilbo Baggins,
which is my favorite,
which is like an inside joke. If you have no idea what that means, if you're like, what? But I mean, if you know what that is, it's just like, oh my gosh, that's like comic gold, because he's referencing like a 60-year-old video.
Yes, which like, is one of my favorite songs. Like, and I found that song like back when I was a kid, in that weird time when maybe I didn't. Like, I was like, oh, it's by Spock, but for me it was like, oh, I'm so into like Hobbit at this moment, you know, as a kid, and here's a song about the Hobbit, and it's the best thing ever, in the most deep baritone like you've ever heard.
Dying little Hobbit that we all admire. And everybody knows it's Bilbo Baggins.
Greatest
little Hobbit of them all.
And it is the best. Like, thank God he put that out into the world.
yes, and thank God he referenced it in that car commercial. Yes. I mean, like, I don't like car commercials generally, but I'm like, that is the best car commercial mm-hmm. ever.
I don't care about the car, thank you for that commercial.
there will never be a better car commercial. I thank you so much for coming on and spending some time with me this evening. And
thank you for having me.
Telling me about your thoughts about Leonard Nimoy and your process for the, you know, the shoot that you did. It was beautiful. You looked amazing. And I really appreciate that devotion and, you know, reverence that you kind of gave to his work.
Thank you. I was apprehensive because naked. And
it's totally understandable.
I was really overwhelmed and so touched that it's like, well, one, not a single bad comment, which blew my mind. And then like 99% of the comments all immediately talked about like the lighting and just angles and stuff, which was all, you know, because of my boyfriend, Jinyo. I was so excited that they could immediately hit upon like the effort that he and I had done together to do these very specific images, and that everything I wanted to do like seemed to come across to everyone. I was just ecstatic for how people did see it. Like, I actually got something out of my brain and into reality, and then people actually saw it the way I meant them to.
That's awesome. I'm glad you had positive feedback on that, because I know it can be kind of hard if, you know, when they don't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, again, thank you for coming on, and live long and prosper, Victoria.
You too. It was awesome.
So this is, I'm here with Kat Sky. She's a cosplayer and model. Any other credentials you would like to have mentioned?
Right now we're just doing cosplay model. You know, I'm still starting out with the voice acting, no acting underneath my belt or any other thing like that. And social media. I'm really big in social media. People know me there.
Oh, yeah. And if you listen to the show and you're part of our Synthaholics group, she posts there probably at least once a week. So you should know her at least from that. So, we've been talking about Leonard Nimoy a little bit on the show. So, what is your first memory of Leonard Nimoy? Do you have a first memory, or was he always there for you?
I do have a first memory of Leonard Nimoy. My grandmother was a Generations fan, so Generations was what I was raised with, and then my grandfather was Original Series. So there was always Original Series and Generations, and since I was raised by my grandparents, they watched a lot of TV Land, and what was on TV Land? Star Trek. And so I remember sitting with my grandpa, watching Star Trek, looking at Spock, and I remember pointing at the TV going, "Grandma, Grandpa, he's an elf!" Yeah. And they just chuckle at me because I'm just a little kid. I don't know any better. And so my grandma explains to me, she goes, "That is actually a Vulcan, my dear child. His name is Spock." And I'm like, "What's a Vulcan?" And so she explains to me the show of what it's about, that it's a sci-fi show with aliens, and it's kind of fantasy. And it just completely blew my mind away. And then I started connecting Next Generation to the Original Series, and it just was, boom, amazing. And since then, I remember being a Trekkie, but I didn't relate the Vulcan hand sign to Leonard Nimoy and Spock at first as a kid. It was actually the relation of watching Disney Channel one day, and during the commercials, you know, sometimes they'd have, like, what's the stars, at the famous stars at the time doing, that's what they had when I was a kid. They do flashbacks of, you know, certain comedies that do child voices, like Robin Williams would come on.
Sure.
At this point, it was Jackie Chan. For some reason, Disney Channel was doing a quick documentary for kids of Jackie Chan because he was a voice actor in one of their movies, I guess. And so it was him on the red carpet walking by, and he looks at a reporter, and he does one of these, and he says, "Live long and prosper." And then I stopped, and I'm like, I remember that from something. What was it from? And so I watched Star Trek again, and I learned that was Leonard Nimoy. And then again, my mind just exploded going, I'm not the only one in the house other than my grandparents that knows what this is. It's bigger than that. And then I started realizing that it's very wide and expansive at that time. And so many people are connected to it in such a very emotional and personal way, because it has a memory to anything, your childhood, your, I don't know how to say, childhood personal experiences. It's just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. And I was, I mean, I can't think of any, personally, any first memory of Leonard Nimoy, because, like, my dad had it on when I was a kid all the time. So, like, I just always knew who he was.
Mm-hmm.
And
he becomes a familiar face, just in your home and in your life, because he's been in so much. There is so much.
Exactly. Do you remember where you were when he passed? Did that moment, like, stick out to you forever?
That moment when Leonard Nimoy passed, I actually did a video a couple seconds after I found out he passed away, and I posted it. So it is on my Facebook. It probably will get posted again. It actually flared up. Someone went through my videos currently on Facebook and shared or commented on the video. And you know, Facebook, when someone comments on something that hasn't been seen in 4 years, it goes right to the top. So there goes that video again, right to the top. So beginning of January, that video was going around again. And so I'm surprised it hasn't started up. But I was at work, and I cried for hours. I cried in the video. I did a short little segment where I wanted to, you know, show support for his passing. So I wrote Live Long and Prosper in my hand. And I got a bunch of close friends on Facebook to do the same. And then it just was a chain reaction there after there after there. And it was actually in the news when Leonard Nimoy passed, all these people doing that, from just a little idea that I had, to see how far it would go, to see how many people truly miss him. And it was a very unique experience to see. And I was so happy about it.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's awesome that it caught on that way.
Oh, yeah. I was surprised. Very surprised.
Yeah, I was also at work. I worked 13-hour days at the time, and I was, like, bawling off and on throughout the entire day. It was a rough day. And I don't know if you're familiar with Warp 11, the band, but they have a song called Beam Me Up to Heaven. And I listened to that song on the way to work that day, and then I found that at work that he had passed away. I was like, oh. So, it was definitely, like, that day is definitely etched in my mind.
Yeah.
Do you have any favorite Leonard Nimoy moment from even his work of Star Trek or outside of Star Trek? Is there anything that that sticks out in your mind? Is
With Leonard Nimoy, I would have to say that he was a very unique photographer. He had a very unique eye, and I loved looking at his photography because it was a hobby he had. And if you look at his photography, it of course, you know, who's in those most of the time? Women. So he does have a lot of very beautiful artistic photos of women out there that are very, you know, they're not pornographic, they're sensual.
Sure,
so,
yeah.
When I think of Leonard Nimoy outside of Spock, I think of him as a photographer, an artist. He was really big into science. He supported science a lot. So those are the things that stick out to me a lot with him.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, I mean, I didn't know a whole lot about his photography and everything beforehand, but I definitely before we did our episode of him last year, I went and looked up a bunch of stuff and I tried to share it in the show notes, so everyone who saw this would be able to, you know, see what some other stuff that he's done other than Spock. Because he's going to be known for Spock forever, but he did so much more. He directed. He mm-hmm. wrote poetry. He did this photography, and his photos are very striking. He had a very good eye for what he did. Anything else about Leonard Nimoy that it's been a year since he passed. Like, is anything like if you did your video and the writing on your hand? Is anything else stuck out in your mind this year, or can you believe it's been a year already?
I actually said the other day when February hit, I'm just like it's already a year. When it's February hit, I'm like it's already been a year to me. This whole month, I will always remember. For Leonard Nimoy passing away. I work on Hollywood Boulevard, and not too far from where I work, I can actually step outside the door of my job, look across the street, and at the corner shop across the street at the light, when you pull the doors down at night, they show pictures of different celebrities and directors and famous people on the doors of the shop. So Leonard Nimoy's face is on the corner of the shop, and right at the corner of the step before you cross the street is his star. And a couple of people have delivered flowers to his star in the past couple of weeks. And I went by there the other night and I, you know, said my good wishes and prayers to him. And so I will always see him no matter what. He's not just a memory. I always see his face. May it be on social media, on TV. No, I go to work and I see his face.
that's awesome that he's there and his star is so close to where you are and you can see it and see people pay respect to him in that way.
It's nice to see that. Shirley Temple's star is not too far away either, and they did the same thing for her. I'm actually good friends with her great niece, Laurel.
Oh, wow.
And so that was another one of my grandmother's favorite childhood stars was Shirley Temple. That's, yeah.
Oh, my,
different story.
My mom loves Shirley Temple.
So that was another one. People were delivering flowers to her star and candles. So it's really cool. It doesn't happen often, but when it does, it's really sentimental.
Oh, for sure. Oh. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing some of your thoughts and memories and you know, what makes Leonard Nimoy important to you with us today. I really appreciate you coming on and talk with me.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime, Leonard Nimoy was someone I looked up to as a kid because he had logic. And to me, in my life at that time, the world was crazy and chaotic. And so he made sense.
And yeah. and you do Vulcan with your cosplay a bit, and you do Science Blue.
I do Science Blue. I do the traditional Science Blue Vulcan. I do the Abrams version dress from the newest movies, but I do the black tights like in the original series, mm-hmm. which gives it so much more appealing accent than just bare legs. To me, the bare legs is just so bland. It shows too much skin. It to me, it's not a classy thing. If you want to wear it like that, good for you. That's your cosplay. To me, I prefer the tights.
Yeah, it gives a little bit of a contrast with the blue, especially with the J.J. Abrams uniform. It's got the Delta Shield built into it, so it's got that dark color.
This just came in the mail today.
Oh, nice. She is holding up a Next Generation uniform.
And that came in the mail today, too.
Oh, sweet. The Bajoran earring.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to open this because it's unopened. Original date is 1998.
Wow, that's impressive. So
I'm just looking at this. I came in the mail. I'm like, cool, I can wear some stuff, you know, mess around. And I look at the date. I'm like, no.
That's got to stay in the box and stay pristine.
Yeah. And so I posted that and I talked about it on my Facebook. And then someone replied about a couple minutes later saying, you know what, I have an extra one. So, yeah, I'm going to get another one in soon. But, yeah.
Like, my favorite uniform from the show is probably the Deep Space Nine uniform, the gray top.
Yeah, the Deep Space Nine ones are pretty snappy. I was watching Deep Space Nine earlier today, and I was looking at the uniforms going, those just seem so much more better than Next Generation, but Next Generation is also considered a classic now, too.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely classic, but the first three seasons, the Next Generation uniforms changed at least a little bit.
It went from the jumpsuit to, like, they only had the jumpsuit version, the spandex jumpsuit, for about a couple episodes before it jumped to the actual the actual heavier style with the zip up in the back. And then that lasted for like a couple more episodes and it got heavier. And then as the seasons progressed, it got to a more durable jumpsuit.
And then some of them had like collar, started getting the collar on them a little bit. Yeah.
Instead of having the pips right here, it started right here.
Yeah, exactly.
My favorite is, the classic, Kirk, the uniform, I forgot what the name of it is off the top of my head. The red one with the white little vest across of it. It's the red top with the black pants.
Oh yeah, just the movie uniforms.
Yeah, the movie uniform, I forgot the name of it, but I really like that one. That one's really good one too.
Oh yeah. Are you gonna do a movie uniform?
I would like to do at least one of each if I can in my lifetime. I would love to get the original Blue Science Officer dress from the original series. I know who makes them. I don't have the money. I don't have $400 just to do that at the moment.
Yeah, but yeah, those are.
See what happens.
Oh, for sure. And I think you'd definitely pull off a really good Savick.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people have said, back when I dyed my hair black for the short time last year, everybody, thank you, Scott. Everybody was, saying, oh, you could do a great female Spock. And I'm like, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, or Savick, or if you want to cut your hair short, Valeris.
I have the black wig from my Selene outfit from Underworld. That can actually be my Rolaren outfit. I actually have a Rolaren cosplay. That's why I've been trying to get a Bajoran nose going. She has one of the traditional Bajoran noses because she has the ridges, but then she has that also prominent cross that goes down.
Mm-hmm.
Not all Bajorans have that. In Deep Space Nine, they kind of got away from that. But every now and then, you do see it. And I believe there's an episode in Deep Space Nine where they have a segregation of because of the nose. Can't remember for sure. I'll have to watch it again. It's been a while.
Yeah.
But,
I'm sure. I mean, it's always a reason to bring some kind of segregation into something to make a message.
Yeah, that is true.
Well, thank you so much again, Kat, for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, welcome to Synthaholics. I'm joined by Faith Hertzberg and Guy Davis right now.
Thank you.
Hello.
So, it's like nobody wants to start this one.
Nobody wants to start this one because he was such a
great
guy.
It is.
It's just you tread delicately here.
Yeah, you don't want to go away or go astray, I guess.
And it's all you know, it's just, you know, kind of in remembrance, like, you know, in memoriam. I used to write obituaries and in memoriams, and some of the people, like, they would call in an in memoriam, like, on the birthday of the person they lost, and then the anniversary of the passing, like, and they'd be super sad. And, you know, we try to have fun here at Synthaholics, and we don't want to get you too down, but we still want to remember the man and who he was and get other people's opinions other than just, you know, Faith, Eyes, and Aaron's, which you normally hear every week.
Yeah.
So Guy, what is your first memory of Leonard Nimoy? Can you even have a first memory, or was he just always there? Because that's how he was for me. He was always there. I can't remember not knowing Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah, he's always been there for me in memory. I mean, I've always said that I've been watching Star Trek since I was at least three, because that's when they started doing the syndicated reruns here in Colorado. It was 75 or so 76, somewhere in there. So yeah, I don't remember actually a time before Leonard Nimoy was part of my life and existence. But I've always said that, you know, in the 80s and the 70s, it was rough being a Trekkie. You know, it was kind of one of those things where you were different and they didn't like you being different. And so it ended up being an unpleasant experience at school. And it was nice to know that Spock was different and he still was a respected member of the crew and a respected member of the ship. And I always really I clinged on to that without that pun. I really, you know, grabbed onto that particular effect, the fact that he was different and still respected. And, you know, that was it was a different world back then, but still, that's sort of my first memory, was how important he was to just my childhood.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, you know, being the geeky kids in the 70s and 80s, I mean, I was born 83, but I mean, even in the, you know, even in the late 80s, early 90s, like nerds, I mean, like, I had like my clique of three people who were just the other people who were ostracized for being nerds.
We're all ostracized together.
We read Star Wars books. You know, I know the Star Trek podcast, but I mean, that's kind of how I got introduced to Star Wars. A couple of my friends just read books, and I'm like, okay, I'll be part of this crew. I'll start reading.
Yeah. And I guess it's kind of one of those things. My father also has COPD, so that strikes pretty close to home.
Oh, grief.
You know, because he had been saying for the last 5 or 6 years, this is really not the last 5 or 6, but he's been saying for the last few years of his life, you know, talking about smoking and don't smoke and this is what happens when you smoke and things like that. And, you know, I lost my mother to a heart attack because of smoking, and my father has COPD. And so this really ended up being sort of striking home again in my adulthood, you know.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I've been following him on Twitter and things like that for a very long time as well, because he's part of my existence. He's part of, I mean, he's as much, I would construe Nimoy as much of my family as people around me, my friends and my family themselves, even though I never really knew the guy in person or anything like that.
Oh, I feel exactly the same way. I mean, like, I was at work the day he passed away, and I worked, you know, 12-hour long shifts, and like, I was like, I cried more or less throughout my entire shift. And a couple of people were like, oh, why you didn't know the guy? Why are you such a jerk? I'm like, what? I mean, adding insult to injury. And yeah. Then a couple of people understood, you know, what he meant to me. And, you know, they actually, like, you know, were like, I'm sorry for your loss. And I thought that was really nice that some people said that and understood that he was that kind of importance to me.
Yeah, significant and important. Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, you know, he was like the family. I mean, like I said, like, both of us, we've never known a time in our lives where, like, he wasn't there on the television being Spock. You know, right. or in the movie theaters being Spock. Like, he was always Spock, and he wrote, you know, I am not Spock and I am Spock. Like, it's such entwined with this person.
And that's actually a good series of books to read, and in that order, in fact. You should read them, I Am Not Spock, then I Am Spock, because it's interesting how he as an actor evolved in that particular aspect. One of the other things I noticed about Nimoy, and I had a thought just then, and now his professional sort of existence, he was the keeper of the flame with Star Trek. You know, when he joined J.J. Abrams' first movie, the fact that he joined it made all of us kind of go, oh, okay, well, maybe it's not going to be so bad.
It's legitimized a little bit.
Right.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there were a number of times where they said, hey, let's bring Spock back into this, and he's like, no. No, I'm not doing that.
He said no to Generations, thank goodness.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's not just Generations. I mean, he kind of moved through a lot of those different things where he was like, this isn't where I feel like Star Trek should go. You know, this isn't what I feel like Star Trek should do. And he seemed to pretty much echo what the fans were saying at the time. So he was like the keeper of the flame.
Yeah.
And he, so
go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, so it's not just, you know, the loss in all of our hearts that we're missing now. We're kind of missing our flame bearer too, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, he has directed Star Trek films before too. So not only was he acting, he like, you know, knew what to do. And, you know, he directed, you know, The Voyage Home, which basically gave the studio the green light to make a brand new TV show because the movie did so well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we got The Next Generation thanks to Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty much so.
And I find it interesting that he didn't really want to come on to Next Gen until Unification 1 and 2. It took him some time before he warmed up to Next Gen as well.
Oh, you know? Yeah. I think all the actors kind of felt a little, like, shafted a little bit whenever they did a new Star Trek show and it didn't involve any of them. But, you know, the fact that he could still be Spock and still be living and tell an important story with those that two-parter made a lot of sense.
I think that was a very positive thing. And I think that of all the things, though, that, you know, he was an artist. He was a wonderful photographer, and he did amazing photography and things like that later in his life, too, which I thought was another – he was a consummate artist. I always felt, you know, as an artist, I always feel like, wow, you know, this guy is where I've always wanted to be in life, you know. He does his art. He puts the art forward, and he didn't really feel like he ever compromised his art. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
It didn't feel like he was. There was. It didn't feel like there was a moment where he was. Well, I don't know. I don't think that this is good for Star Trek or good for my art or good for. But I'm going to do it anyway. Mm-hmm. It didn't feel like. It felt like he was willing to walk away before somebody compromised something on him. And I thought that was a very respectable thing as a fellow artist, because there are a number of things where you look and you think, gosh, I mean, the number of times where you think, gosh, should I compromise my art in order to make more money, to gain more followers, to be, you know, to there's all these questions that always hit whenever you're doing, when you're trying to tell your story, when you're trying to do your thing. And he didn't compromise. And he told poetry at the end, and, you know, and because of that, he ended on a very poetic note, you know, where his last tweet, which is, you know, a life is like a garden. Perfect moments can be had, but not preserved except in memory. And I thought that was a good way to leave the world, you know?
Yeah, it was very elegant and really touching in so many different little ways.
Yeah, you could have left the Earth by, you know, retweeting Kim Kardashian's but instead he left a good note and with a good feeling, and it was a really good life he led, you know, just a really solid life. You've got to respect that.
Oh, sure. And you know, unlike a lot of actors, he actually kept his role as Spock for, you know, basically his whole professional life.
Yeah.
You know, he was in the Army for a little bit, then he, you know, was trying into acting, and then I mean, you know, Spock wasn't his first thing, but it was probably his first big thing.
It was.
And he kept it for his entire life. And a lot of people and all the actors just kind of get tired of, oh, I'll do maybe a sequel, then I'll, like, I don't want to do it ever again. Like, I like the dedication that he showed to his work and to the character of Spock.
Agreed. And he's like Patrick Stewart. You know, Patrick and him, they seem to embrace Star Trek. You know, you've got your varying degrees of actors who get really freaked out by the fandom. I mean, because we are, I mean, I have to admit it, we're freaky.
We're nerds.
We're a freaky lot sometimes, and we can be really kind of weird. And some of the actors are like, whoa, I didn't realize I was signing up for that, you know. And, of course, the first set of actors, you can give them a pass. They thought they were just doing Lost in Space Part 2. They didn't know they were going to be an institution. They didn't know that was what was going to happen. So to them, you can give them a pass, but all the ones after that, you can't really. Yeah, I really feel like he embraced it. He embraced Star Trek and took it on. And he didn't just embrace it, but he became a steward, you know?
For sure.
And he was, so that's, we lost more than just a family member. You know, the Star Trek lost one of the pillars.
Yeah.
And I think that that was a, that was an impact. That was a major impact.
For sure.
And I feel that way, you know.
Yeah, yeah, it's you know, rough that we lost that. And, you know, with the recent news, Nick Myers coming on, so, like, it might be, I mean, like, you know, it's looking like we're in good hands going forward. So hopefully it'll continue to be looking up for Star Trek, and we'll get some new pillars.
Yeah, we've got a, which isn't Michael. Anyway, oh, there's a joke. Anyway, a Michael pillar. Okay. See. Anyway. Yeah. I was. I think I said this in your thread I said this at Tamerlan anyway. But yeah. I my dream team is being assembled. I like Brian Fuller's stuff. So you know, I was like, okay, Brian Fuller. He's good. He knows what he's doing with the show, stuff like that. But now Nick Meyer's on board, and I'm like, well, there we go. My dream team is coming together.
Now we only need Ron Moore to complete that trilogy.
Oh, the Trinity. Ron, that'd be awesome. That'd be perfect.
That would be the ultimate.
Nick Meyer and Ron Moore. The problem is I don't think Nick Meyer and Ron Moore could probably stand each other after a certain amount of time because they're both that kind of same, really driven, it must be this way, and yeah. It always is beautiful whenever it is that way.
Yeah.
Sort of artists. So I think they'd try to kill each other ultimately. That'd be the end of it.
It'd be the ultimate arena, yeah, instead it of Kirk be. Kirk versus the Gorn, Meyer versus Moore.
Yep.
So what's your favorite Leonard Nimoy moment? Other than, I mean, you definitely highlighted his passing note and his tweet that was so inspirational and just such a positive. I mean, he didn't die when he wrote it, but I mean, that's the last tweet he made, so he knew it was coming.
He knew he was on his way out. There are a lot of wonderful Nimoy moments out there, and it's really hard to pick and choose. I think, though, if there's any one thing that, and I don't mean to be a downer because I know the idea here you're trying to get is, you know, an uplifting thing. I'm going to leave that to Faith. She can be uplifting. because I think my ongoing, because I think the thing that I'm most impressed with him and the thing that sticks with me is that he's become this spokesperson for COPD. And I think that's a big step for him and an important thing. He used it's leveraging his
celebrity.
His celebrity.
He'll be a legend forever because of that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's an important thing to say. So, favorite memory of his? I don't have. There's so many of them. I don't know. I mean, I can't. I mean, it's like there's so many memories that my brain is just I can't pick one. But I do think the thing that will stand out further than Spock and his ears will be forever and ever and ever the fact that he was, you know, using his celebrity to further the message about COPD. So anyway, yeah.
That's a great thing that he did and being able to use a celebrity that way and make it so aware because so many people love him. It's just a testament to the character of the man.
Yeah. Strong character. Very strong character. I still wish that he had recorded navigational stuff so I could have him on my phone to navigate. But I've got Morgan Freeman, and that's pretty cool.
Leonard Nimoy's voice is epic. Like, it's not a favorite Leonard Nimoy moment of mine, but I love that he narrated Civilization IV. And I liked Civ 5 a lot. Then I'm like, the only thing missing from Civ 5 is just Leonard Nimoy. I wonder if anyone patched like Civ 5 to use the Leonard Nimoy voice actor files instead. Because just hearing Leonard Nimoy just made me feel happy when I was like building the pyramids or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's in the 70s he did In Search Of, and which was this short-lived sort of, I don't know what you'd call it today, but it was a show where they, you know, explored Bigfoot and explored the Loch Ness Monster and all of these things. And he always, you know, he did the narration for it, and in the style of the 70s had an awful lot of walking on the beach, talking to the camera sort of style things going on. And I remember those when I was a kid, and I remember how comfortable it was to hear his voice, even though he was talking about things that were completely freaky, because I knew that the Loch Ness Monster was right outside my window. I knew it. That was like six.
That plesiosaur gets around.
Totally freaked me out. I'm sure that's what kids in the 90s who were watching X-Files probably had the same effect.
Dreaming of Leonard Nimoy narrating them.
Yeah. But yeah, it's the same thing. His voice was so comforting, you know, and it was such a comfortable thing. That's one of the things that's great is that a lot of the audio books that were done in the 80s, 90s, and the beginning of this century were narrated by him. So go listen to Strangers from the Sky or some of the other books that were the audio books from that era, and he narrated them. Oh, so if you want your Leonard Nimoy fix,
check out some audiobooks.
Check out the audiobooks, the Star Trek audiobooks.
Yeah. Going back to Star Trek and Leonard Nimoy a little bit more, have you watched The Wrath of Khan since his passing?
No. No. Now The Wrath of Khan is sort of on the Schindler's List thing. It's like, I don't know if I can handle it. Because that's hard. That's at the end there, it's going to be tough.
I mean, that's a tough scene to watch, like, when he was still alive.
Yeah, it's a tough scene. It's a tough scene to watch when he was still there. It's harder to watch now, you know. It's going to be I know that on the day that he died, those words were ringing in my brain, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that – but, yeah, I haven't watched it since then.
Yeah,
I know I'm going to have to, but
I've watched it at least once, and it was because we did a Khan three-parter, so we had to watch Wrath of Khan, so it was like fresh wound.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I mean, it's been a year now, and 2 is my favorite movie. It's the one that I can quote from the very beginning to the very end. So it can't stay off my screen for too long, but
for sure.
There is definitely a mourning period where I don't want to watch 2.
Oh, for sure. But you know, that's just kind of one of the things I had to ask, because I mean, that's like, you know, it's sad enough.
Absolutely.
You know, before he passed. Now it's like, now he's really gone. And it's just like,
Yeah, that's a tough one. Oh, well, what about you, Faith? Let's pass the ball to you. I've been dominating.
No, I drew a blank for a second there, because for me, growing up, he was kind of my hero. Like, he was the reason why I started watching Star Trek, and the reason why I continued to watch Star Trek, and why I even came back to watching it. And I don't know. He was the first person I ever got to meet when I went to a cosplay convention, and it was the first time I ever had the courage, after having my kids and that, to go out and actually cosplay again for the first time in ages. And he was just so nice. Like, I think it was about 5 years ago. It was 5 or 6 years ago that I met him, and like, I was so shy, and it was just, I was absolutely in awe of him, and I still got the photos somewhere, but he actually hugged me and complimented me on my costume.
We'll have to put that up somewhere on the Facebook site or something. If you can find that photo, it'd be awesome.
Well, I can honestly say that his words to me that day are the reason why I became a fabricator. It definitely, you know, somebody like him noticed somebody like me. It was definitely one of those moments that you realize that you can do something. And he brought that to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
It's interesting how many of us were inspired, not just entertained, but inspired.
Oh, I tried every year since then to try and meet him again, and I actually, I just missed him.
Oh no.
Yeah. Which is why, like, the last con that he was at, I was almost there. And then I found out that he had passed, and I was so sad.
You missed him just barely.
Yeah, just barely. Like, I had the ticket to go, I didn't have a way to get there.
Oh.
But still, yeah, it was a very, very touching experience.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's amazing. I mean, I did not have the privilege of meeting him in person. It just must be amazing.
Yeah, neither have I. I've never met him in person either. I mean, he just inspired me from afar.
I was so scared. I was like, oh my God, it's him. And like, he puts you completely at ease. Like, yeah. I felt like we were old friends. I mean, it was just, he's awesome, man. Like, amazing.
Mm. That's awesome.
That is really cool. That is really cool. Yeah, I think I think that's an amazing story all the way across the board. I just think that he inspired you to be a fabricator is really cool. You know?
He complimented me. Like, wow, you know, he's Leonard Nimoy. You know, of all people, I got a compliment from my hero from ever since I could remember. Like, I was, that doesn't happen.
Right.
That's amazing. That's an awesome, awesome personal story, Faith. Thank you.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
It's another trait of Nimoy is he's also down to earth, grounded, you know? He could look down on us from afar or whatever, but he didn't. You know, he didn't.
He was real.
He was very real.
And he loved the fans.
Yeah. Yeah, he understood we were the reason that this is still a thing, you know, and that we were the blood of the entire industry. I don't know what you want to call it. IP. I don't know. He's just got really. I was getting all like flourishy and flowery with my words, then lost track of where I was going. So heading somewhere.
He's the heart of the community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and giving us some of your thoughts about the Leonard Nimoy guy. I really appreciate you coming on and talking to us a little bit.
Thank you for having me. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, as always.
That's always great.
It was great joining you.
It's always great getting to talk with you, and sorry for making everyone cry tonight.
Yeah, I know.
It's okay.
But it's
still fresh for everybody, it seems.
But hopefully, yeah. Hopefully people get a chance to hear this and be able to, you know, just hear a vast majority. You know, I'm trying to get several different interviews so we can hopefully get, a lot of people's feelings. And that way a lot of people can hear lots of people's feelings instead of just a couple people's feelings.
Mm.
So that'd be great. Thank you for joining us, Guy. Hope you have a good evening.
Thank you for having me. And live long and prosper.
I'm also bringing in tonight my friend Tanya Hawley. She has been on the Cupcake Wars twice and apparently a very big Star Trek fan who lives in Iowa. So very, very much welcome, Tanya.
Oh, you live near where Kirk was born.
I do, yes. It's very exciting like that.
Awesome.
So, Tanya.
Very nice.
Yes, it's awesome. And she actually just started a Facebook group for like Star Trek Iowa, so she can try to meet other people in Iowa who want to talk about Star Trek.
We have about 15 people right now, but we just started a week or two ago, so come on.
Excellent.
Well, that's true. And, you know, maybe, who knows, you might have the great-great-grandfather of James Kirk himself joining.
Yes.
Which would be fabulous.
And
Tanya, what is your first memory of Leonard Nimoy?
Well, I guess unlike a lot of people, I'm not a long time Trek fan. I actually am pretty new to it. Really started getting into it about a year ago. But I do remember when I was younger, my dad would, I don't know if he was watching the original series or if he was watching a movie or whatnot. But I do remember seeing Spock and asking him why he had pointy ears. And, you know, my dad said, well, he's an alien. It's like, well, that's not an alien. Aliens are blue or green and they're bald. So I remember that. I don't know how old I was, but I know I was little. And he also, you know, I didn't spend a lot of time with my dad, but I remember him, you know, he'd show me some little kid hand movements. And one of them, of course, was the Vulcan salute. So I remember really trying and practicing with my fingers to get that down and how excited I was when I finally could do it.
Well, my dad taped my fingers together until I could do it. I didn't. I was not. This was not an optional skill for me in my life. No. I remember, like, it's like, you know, it's at the cusp of when you can start remembering things as a kid. My dad, like, got, like, you know, the scotch tape or whatever, taped two fingers together, taped the other two fingers together on both my hands at the same time, because when he asked me to do it, I couldn't do it on my own. So that's an interesting memory for me from Leonard Nimoy. So you talked a little bit about that you've kind of new to Star Trek, but you saw him as a kid. What's your first recent memory of Leonard Nimoy?
Probably, you know, just going to see the newer Star Trek movies and actually seeing him. You know, I guess a lot of the other original series characters, you know, everyone ages and looks a little different, but Spock, to me, you know, no matter what, he always looks the same. So it was really exciting to be there. I was really excited for the film. I know there's a lot of, you know, actual Star Trek people who don't like the newer films, but I love them. It gets more people to realize it's out there. It probably helped me, you know, re-find out how much I liked Star Trek. And to see him in there, you know, it was like, oh, that's Spock. Yes. Yes, that's him.
That's awesome. So did that kind of inspire you to get back into it again, the new movie?
I think so. It's just, I guess, just, I don't know if it's a time in my life where I'm getting nerdier or what it is. But yeah, all of a sudden, you know, I saw little bits and pieces and I wanted more. And now I'm just kind of exploding.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. I mean, I know you say you don't really count yourself a Trek, and you've only been into it for a year or so. But like when I reached out to you, just said when you liked one of my podcast episodes, I just said thanks, and you sent me like a paragraph, and I was like, wow, this person's excited, and I'm like, I like it when people get excited about Star Trek. So
I am,
So I mean, new Trekkie or not, you're extremely passionate, and that's what's important about being a Trekkie, I think. What do you guys think?
I think it's important for being a geek all the way across the board.
Well, but especially a Trekkie.
But especially a Trekkie.
You gotta love what you do.
Yep.
Right?
Exactly.
You have to be particularly passionate about that.
I'll consider myself more of a Trekkie if I could actually get down to, I guess, you know, I don't know a ton of quotes. I can't, you know, pull up different episodes. I haven't even seen, you know, I've been working on Next Generation.
That's okay.
For a while now. So I haven't seen anything of Voyager or Deep Space Nine, and I've only seen a few of the original series. So, you know, I'm taking it. I want to see everything. So I will be there someday.
Well, there's 760 episodes, though. That's a
let's take it a season
track
at a time through Netflix.
Well, you know, yes. I think there is like a plan online somewhere where you can like try to watch every single episode in a year.
Oh, wow.
I did the math once, and I think if you didn't eat, sleep, drink, go to the bathroom, or shower, you could watch every single episode of Star Trek in a month.
Oh, this explains a great many things.
I manage about 6 or 7 episodes a day, but that's just because I listen to it at work. So I'm not sure that counts.
Well, you're probably well on your way to getting all of them done in a year. If you lose 7 a day, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, I guess it depends. I mean, you know, some of us have many years into this. Like, I watched every episode of Star Trek first run, save the original series. and so, you know, when I was from the age of, like, 3 until, what, 14? Yeah, I guess it was 14. There were only 79 of them to have to worry about.
Oh, yeah. So,
which made it easy then, but now you got so many more.
Yeah, so I don't envy someone who has to walk in now with the bulk of 700 and something. I mean, you've got literally
you've got until January to catch up,
because
that's when the new ones come out. You get further behind.
And I don't think the ability to to quote or all of those things is the definition of a Trekkie, because I think there's a lot to Star Trek in its belief system and the way that you kind of view the world or through the eyes of the Star Trek and things like that. I think there's like a completely different way of kind of handling it. So I think you're just as much of a Trekkie as the rest of us. I wouldn't call that a fault because you can't quote, you know, episode 73 or what.
Just enjoying it is the key part of being a nerd about anything. As long as you enjoy it and it's something that you feel passionate about, that's what matters. Like, I mean, Aaron and David can quote, and even Guy can quote everything. And I like what I see.
Yeah, there you go.
So.
Well, I can't quote everything. I am.
Oh, you have some amazing limited knowledge. I just observed the odd detail from time to go, and oh hey, let me throw this rock in the wheel.
Yeah, you do. And the thing is, that's the great thing about having you.
Good.
That's the great thing about having you on the show, Faith, is like you go places Aaron and I would never go or think about.
That sounds so.
It's not a Synthaholics episode if I wouldn't say something that sounds, you know,
I mean,
suspect.
I'm not sure if that's a compliment.
I'm not sure whether it's a you, plus or
you boldly go where right? Aaron or David is
Does
not.
Does he go in both columns? Yeah, I do. That's
you straddle the line. Wait, that doesn't sound right either.
There's no way to say it.
No, there isn't. But you compliment us and you bring a very unique perspective, and it's a different perspective, and that's to me what all about the Star Trek podcast is getting different perspectives on the thing we all love in an entertaining way so that everyone likes listening to it.
Yep, that's the nice thing about having so many different people with so many different nerd and geek tendencies, because then you have a whole bunch of people noticing things from many different perspectives, and all of a sudden you've got a better picture of it.
Exactly. So, since you're new to Star Trek, Tanya, have you looked up anything Leonard Nimoy's done outside of Star Trek, or are you just into Star Trek as far as like what he's done?
Yeah, no. I know when I first, you know, a year ago, heard that he had died, I kind of looked at some stuff. So saw, you know, his photography, his poems he'd written. And there's actually, it's actually super simple. It's actually a little silly, but one of the ones I found that he did, it said, "Rocket ships are exciting, but so are roses on a birthday." I was like, that, it's just so simple, but cute. And that one really, really stuck with me.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. He's he was talented at everything he did. He was a great actor, a great director. His photography was amazing, and his poetry was touching.
Agreed.
And we talked a little bit about his last tweet a little while ago with Guy. What was that again, Guy?
You know, so his last tweet was, "A life is like a garden. Perfect moments can be had, but not preserved, except in memory."
So that's another great one. That's how we said he his last tweet to us.
His last words to everybody, really. I mean, except his family. Yep. And that was only 4 or 5 days before he passed. 5 days before he passed. So, sort of the last transmission, if you will.
For sure. So, Tanya, have you seen Unification Part 1 and 2 of Next Generation yet, where Spock shows up in Next Generation?
Yeah, I actually just maybe saw it about a month ago, because I'm on Season 5 right now. So, yeah, that was a great one.
Awesome. In Star Trek, what is your favorite Leonard Nimoy moment so far that you've seen?
Oh, gosh. I don't really know specifically. I know. Oh, I don't know. I should have been prepared with that, shouldn't I? I guess I really did just enjoy seeing him in the newer movies. You know, I don't know. That really just made me excited to see him.
Yeah, you said it kind of inspired you to get into the rest of it. So that's very cool. Very cool. Any other thoughts you have about Leonard Nimoy?
Speak
your
gosh.
Mind. Speak your soul. Pour it out to us.
I mean, he did so many great things with, you know, his poetry and the photography. I was looking through some of them, and the one that really stood out to me, they had like a a black and white one, and it wasn't at all what I was expecting. Or the collection was called Black and White, and it was actually the person was, you know, like painted or sprayed white, and she was in front of a black background, which she really stood out with. And I don't know, just kind of that kind stood out to me because it was different. And with the title, I was expecting just black and white, you know, photos, not the subject actually being black and white. But, you know, he will always be remembered as Spock, no matter everything else he did. You know, he had a huge career, was, you know, in a ton of different shows and cameos and movies and voiceovers, but he is Spock to everyone.
Yeah, I definitely think that's how he'll always be remembered. And, you know, I said a little bit earlier that...
it's hard to see him as anything else.
It is, but, you know, the fact that he was so dedicated to the role, he basically was this role his entire life. So, like, just, he's a very dedicated man, and I really appreciate that he did all the things that he did.
I agree. And that's 5 seconds of dead air.
Dead air. That's what the edit button is for.
It was a respectful moment of silence. That's what that was.
Respectful moment of reflection.
And there you go. We just had a moment of reflection.
Yes, we did.
For our departed. So, Tanya, you're just in Next Gen at this point.
I am. Yes.
And you're what? So you're past sixth season, or fifth season? I mean.
Oh gosh.
Or are you in fifth season?
I don't know if I'm in fifth season or if I'm out of it now. It's been a few days since I've seen it. I'm going without internet right now, so.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow. I feel for you there. So, yeah. So far, as a just an aside, besides Unification 1 and 2, out of respect, what kind of episodes stand out to you?
In Next Generation?
Yeah, Next Gen, yeah.
I'm a huge Data fan. So a lot of his episodes, and it's actually, you know, I really liked it when I was young. I did see Next Generation on TV. So that's why I started watching Next Generation right now. Well, you know, since I've started watching every episode, and there's so many that, you know, I didn't see back then because they just show, I don't know, a select few over and over when it played on TV. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know. There's just so many, like when, oh gosh. I hate being on the spot. I'm awful at this. I spend too much time alone talking to my dog and cat. So when I'm with humans, it's a little different, isn't it? When Data creates, you know, his daughter. Oh my, I was like crying at the end of that. I'd never even heard of that episode. To me, no one had mentioned it. You know, granted, I don't really have many Trekkie friends. So why would a stranger tell me about that episode? But yeah.
Thank you for delivering the pizza. By the way, let's talk about this. Yeah.
Do you remember when Data created LOL and she decided to be a girl? And Picard did a double face palm when he was trying to explain that, you know, maybe he shouldn't try to procreate by himself?
Right. The Offspring's a good episode.
Yeah. I plan on being LOL for one of the con. Well, I'm going to the 50th con in Chicago, so that's one of my days. I know I'm going to be her.
Oh, that's awesome.
Awesome.
LOL is great. Like, especially people recognize you. You can give them, like, the little clueless faces. Like, what? What is that?
Yeah. And you got Data's Day is a good one on that one, too. It was interesting. I went back to watch all episodes of Star Trek because I had, a few years back, I had discovered a random episode of Voyager that I had never seen. And I thought that was very strange since, I had seen them all on first run. So I was like, how did I miss this episode of Voyager? Obviously, that was a night when I, you know, did something, went out on a date. I don't know, whatever. Something happened.
Life happened. Life happened hard.
So as a sort of, well, okay. Obviously, you know, I remember during sixth and seventh season of TNG, I was graduating high school and I was, you know, it was the first year of college and, you know, I was hanging out with friends. So I had a feeling that there were some spots that I had missed in sixth and seventh season. I was going back and rewatching them and sure enough, I missed one episode. It's a date, and it was a Data episode. It was now I've seen it all of one time, so it's hard for me to pick it all up. But you know, it's an episode where he beams down to this planet and he loses his memory. And
I love that episode.
It is it's a wonderfully fun episode.
And he's got nuclear material.
Yes.
Pours in the water well.
It's a great idea. We'll put it there. That'll work.
That'll make everyone feel lead belly.
It was just interesting. She said, you know, you were talking about watching Data episodes, and that made me think of that. That was a particularly interesting episode, and it's also the one that was missing. For some reason, for the longest time, Wolf in the Fold from the original series kept missing it somehow, just by the randomness of the world.
Well, the randomness of the world was doing you a favor.
Yeah, I know. It wasn't exactly a very good episode, but it still was very interesting when at like 11 years old, there's this episode of Star Trek I had never seen. And so every so often I get these, and it was just the roll of the dice, you know. Like, Channel 2 here would play it every night at 10 o'clock, so I'd watch it before I go to bed. Long after Mom thought I had gone to bed.
Uh-oh.
No.
Nice.
So now I do have a question, actually.
Sure, mm-hmm. Feel free.
I think either it might have been your first episode. When I first started listening to you guys, I think I was on, 48 was the first one I caught. And then I went back to the beginning. But, you know, you talk about how a lot of times when you talk about episodes, you're like, oh, no, not that episode. Or, oh, you know, this had so many flaws. And obviously, you know, you love the show, so you've dissected everything about it. So when you were just talking about this episode you missed, you know, you were 11 back when you first watched these and you were younger, were you like, oh, that's just a silly episode? Or to you back then, were you like, this is great? And over the years, you know, you've realized, oh, that's a little funny.
It's really interesting because looking back at myself as a child, there wasn't an episode of Star Trek that I didn't particularly care for, except for The Cage and Where No Man Has Gone Before, because they were both the wrong uniforms and the ship looked wrong.
That's not right.
It's funny because looking back on it, even Spock's Brain, which is like a notoriously bad episode of TOS, even that was pretty cool in my book. And, you know, I think to answer your question, what I thought was good and bad of Star Trek was different when I was a child than it is now. You know, now I've got experience, you know, experience in what makes a good story, what makes a good episode and things like that that have colored it. And back then it was just a lot of fun and entertainment. So I think for me, the answer to your question is no, it was, I loved The Wolf in the Fold when I saw it the first time. It's beautiful.
I mean, I kind of talked a little bit about that with Carbon Creek. Like the first time I saw Carbon Creek, it was like kind of like, oh, I was like, why are they doing this? They just had the temporal Cold War stuff. Aren't we getting more of the temporal Cold War? The temporal Cold War is interesting. This has nothing to do with anything. Why do we care? Why are we even wasting time on this when we could be figuring out who the shadowy guy is?
Right.
So, I mean, like, but then, you know, as I get older, it's like, wow, that's a really good episode. It's thoughtful. It's interesting. It's got some humor in it. It was just a really good episode of television.
It's so funny because I actually prefer Carbon Creek over a lot of the other stuff they were doing in that season. It's one of my favorites out of that entire season.
Yeah.
And it's because I really didn't particularly care for the temporal Cold War. I thought they were missing the beats on it. So,
because they didn't do it enough. That's why they missed the beats on it.
I see. Now we know.
Curses. Damn you all to hell. Wait, it's wrong franchise. Sorry. But,
Yep, wrong one.
Yep.
Back step.
Back step. And we're talking about Leonard Nimoy tonight. Yes. So
two steps.
Two steps. Sachet.
Yeah. I always wanted to be a Vulcan when I was a kid. Because of Spock, obviously. Because there were no other Vulcans at that point in time except Sarek.
Never stopped.
And then even Sarek's wife. Makeup.
Yeah, even Amanda was a human.
Yeah, exactly. So there's only two Vulcans.
I actually have met or had met Mark Lenard once a long, long time ago. But yeah. Yeah, so it's interesting. I really did want to be a Vulcan when I was a kid. And, you know, especially when we had the rough days when, you know, when I was being made fun of and all of that stuff, I really wanted to be, because I was all mad, you know, it was like, I was mad. I knew that wasn't very productive and I knew that wasn't going to solve the problem. And I knew being mad wasn't helping. So I really just wanted to be a Vulcan so I wouldn't be mad anymore, you know?
Yeah, that would solve all of it.
Yeah. And then you saw 2009. It's like, man, I can't push kids around. I should have done that. No.
Should have pushed him around. Yeah.
Should have pushed him down that little, like, semicircle hole.
It's funny that you say that, though, because the first actual prosthetic that I made was Vulcan ears.
Sweet.
That's
like
awesome.
That, it seemed like the simplest thing to do in the world. It wasn't easy. It took a lot of tries, but I was like, you know what? I really want to be a Vulcan, and I want to go to a convention as a Vulcan. And I went as a Vulcan.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I bought those horrible – in the 80s, they'd put out these rubber ears that just kind of fit over your entire
ear. Latex ones.
And they just kind of like – they made you look kind of like a TIE fighter. I don't know what the story was. Either that or Princess Leia. I don't know. Anyway, it was horrible, but I loved those things. They were the best.
Yeah.
Yes.
For sure. Kind of funny going back to what Tanya said about aliens not, you know, he's not bald and he's not like green or blue or something like that. Like, I know one of the original concepts for Spock was for him to be devilish and red. I'm so glad, he didn't get painted red, because that would have been really weird.
The whole reason behind that was because red turned black on black and white TVs.
Yeah.
Oh.
So since we still had black and white TVs back then, and it actually is an interesting thing that NBC backed out of that one because they didn't want people thinking the first officer was black.
Oh, I'm very glad they said no to that, because that would have just been weird. Also, Data, speaking of Data, and now we're talking about makeup and stuff like that, Data's original color was bubblegum pink.
Yeah.
Oh,
so,
my. I've seen the picture of Jordan, so, his, like...
His fro.
His fro.
Oh, gosh, I've seen that.
So,
Whoa, Geordi was scary.
So thankfully, Star Trek has dodged some bullets. No red Spock. Oh man, if all the Vulcans are red, that would have just been awful. Like it would have been. I don't think Star Trek would have been able to be taken seriously if they would have made Spock red.
Well, yeah. They didn't dodge a couple of other bullets. I mean, the Trill looked completely different in Next Gen as what they look like with Dax. So
yeah.
So there were times where they were like, you know what? And of course the Klingons look completely different from Toss.
Well, they retconned that very well. So
they did a beautiful job of retconning that one.
It took a long time, but it was beautiful the way it turned out.
Yes. Serious props, because that was clever.
Very much.
There was a lot to Fourth Season Enterprise that I said, you know, if the entire show had been like Fourth Season Enterprise, they'd still be on today.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Because that was beautiful.
They did some really great stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to thank you, Tanya, for coming on and giving us some of your thoughts about Leonard Nimoy. And since it's been a year of his passing.
It's an honor to be with you guys.
Well, it's really good to have you.
Having you on. It's one of those episodes. It's got you right in the fields.
The Leonard Nimoy moments of silence, and I'm sorry we've gotten sidetracked on some other things, but it's what we do. We get sidetracked here, Synthaholics.
Yeah, what really happened, what you guys can't see because you're listening to this, is during that time we were all doing the Vulcan salute.
Yes.
Silently doing the Vulcan salute. That was it.
Yep. Head down, moment of silence.
Yes. Moment of silence, Vulcan salute. Okay.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Y'all have a great evening. And thank you for giving us your thoughts on the wonderful man that was Leonard Nimoy.
Agreed. Thank you.
Vulcan salute to everybody.
Vulcan salute.
Hey, guys. This is David here with Larry Nemechek. kind of the same drill with everyone we'd talked with before, just kind of going over just some thoughts about Leonard Nimoy since we're on over that 1 year since he's passed away. Hey, Larry.
Hey.
Welcome. Thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Well, sure, David. Thanks.
I'm going to assume and guess that your kind of background with Leonard Nimoy probably is kind of like mine. A lot of Trekkies were like, what's your first thought? Do you have a first thought of first memory of Leonard?
Well, I mean, when he died a year ago, I was tweeting, because as everybody was, which was part of the thing also, is we figured out that, oh my God, this is like the first one of the first original series people to pass away in the really hardcore social media era,
mm-hmm.
you know, because even I think the last one before this was maybe Majel, and that was 07-08, and that was just when it was kicking off. But
yeah.
But Jimmy and Dee and Gene were all further back, so this was the first time everybody could like just pour onto the internet all at once like that, which was kind of interesting and made you think of here's Spock and science and computers going forward again. So, I wrote a thing at the time about. I went back and looked at my first few tweets, and what really hit me at the time was, you know, I'm a big DeForest Kelly fan, big McCoy fan, but it kind of hit me that I'd always like taken Leonard and Spock for granted. It was like, well, yeah, it's Spock. It's one of the big characters. Of course, he represents the future for many, many people. Kirk was the hero, but you know, like when Newsweek did the first mainstream story on Star Trek in, say, 86, when the Whales movie went so mainstream, and they, you know, the first time the studio celebrated a Star Trek anniversary big time, and when they announced Next Generation, and it was a pivotal year. What did Newsweek put on the cover of? On the cover, did they put the Enterprise? Did they put a cash shot? No, they put Leonard as Spock, because Spock represented Star Trek and represented the future and alien life and things like the domination of rationality over, you know, irrationality and mythology, you know, learned science and thinking. Versus, you know, running around screaming that the eclipse means the gods are going to kill us.
Oh yes, you know. Yeah.
So all that stuff. So I mean, that's what I thought when he passed. But what got me personally was I basically said I think I've taken Spock for granted all these years. Well, yeah, it's Spock. Now, how about the characters that don't get as much attention? But and then Leonard as this incredible performer and kind of understated and somebody who overcame a stigma. The way Shatner and the way all of them did about, you know, being famous for any actor that's famous for a character. It's almost like the curse of the more iconic the character, the harder it is as a working actor to get away from that. But he did, and then he directed. And, you know, he would use Star Trek as a springboard. He would direct in Star Trek and then go off and do Three Men and a Baby, you know, other movies and things too, and do other acting. And then eventually, as he got older, even, you know, really lose himself in his photography.
Yeah.
You know, and do that. So that's – my head kind of went through all that a year ago. And aside from the fact of, oh, my God, it's been a year since he passed, it's kind of like a little more leaven now. And, I think people are more over the shock now, and they're kind of thinking more what that means without having it just be the shock factor, but just maybe taking a longer – view of Leonard and Spock and the man and the career and all the things. I mean, I really, between the last time he did a show, I mean, his last convention live was the creation in Chicago, but the big Vegas Con creation before that was the one that I remember.
Yeah.
Technically it was his next to last. And then he did the Skype appearances after that, but which were, you know, kind of technology bending. It's like, I remember I saw the first one of those in Florida and thought, oh my God, here he is. And he's still, you know, breaking the paradigm. Here he's doing convention by Skype. But the Vegas show, when he didn't do anything about Star Trek, he just kind of went through a slideshow of his life. And then my friend John Tenuto, who's the professor there in the Chicago area, who had done some presentations on Leonard, and I had done some, but he had really done some research and pulled some pictures out, but went through his life and remembered, you know, he wasn't just Jewish, but he was, you know, Slavic Jews. And some of the in the 30s and 40s when he was a kid and his parents and some of the prejudice they encountered and some of the, you know, even some of the mean stuff. And he had to get himself out of that, you know, Jewish ghetto in New York kind of thing, in Boston, and getting himself into theater. So the ability of, you know, he was a – I don't know. Maybe that was kind of what drew like the 60s kids – to part of Spock. I mean, the female fans love Spock because of the sexuality, you know, and aloofness and all that. But everybody, part of the appeal of Spock was thinking he was and Star Trek in general. You know, it was more diverse, and that it was about toleration and diversity and celebrating tolerance. And but you went back and go through like Leonard's life, and he really, even though he was white, you know, and you think, oh well, but he grew up poor and faced a lot of prejudice, and he also saw prejudice around him because they grew up in a place where they had a lot of ethnic backgrounds around Boston,
oh, yeah.
Blacks and Italians. And if when you go back into his life, whether it comes from his own, you know, his own remembrances, or you just look at the facts and things that made a mark on him and like, you know, etched in his memory, that he grew up witnessing a lot of prejudice and bias and the downs, you know, not the best of humanity, but still striving for that and realizing that theater and acting let him escape some of that, but also be able to talk about it and be able to, you know, to bring that to. And he had a movie called Kid Monk Baroni, one of his first, where he was a young Italian fighter, and some of the themes came through that. I've never seen the movie, but I've read about it. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it's just part of this reflecting on him and his life, even beyond Spock, is realizing what all went into his life and, you know, his acting and he's a working actor and having to take crappy jobs sometimes to have a paycheck.
Sure.
But as he built his life up and took, you know, and then after Spock and was, aside from fighting stereotypes of, you know, of this iconic character and starving for it, still when he still got to make choices and still the things he chose to do. But he was – every time he acted or directed or did anything creative with his photography, he was bringing all that to it. You know, and I think we've just had a year to kind of reflect, hopefully more people to kind of reflect more on those aspects of Leonard, as well as just what an amazing gift Spock, you know, if nothing else, Spock would have been enough for one lifetime, but he awfully had a lot of other wrinkles too.
Yeah, he did a lot. And last year when we kind of did a memorial on Spock, I, you know, looked at a lot of his photography and started reading through his poetry, and it was really, really inspiring, and especially his last tweet where he was mm-hmm. It was such a great send-off. I can't remember like exactly word for word. But
life is like a garden. Life is like a flower garden. Plant your...
It's like moments can be perfect, but they only last
yes.
a little bit.
Right, right.
It's horrible paraphrasing, and it'll be quoted on here correctly a couple times because we've...
Between the two of us, we almost got
it. Between, yeah, we duct taped an extra long tweet together between the two of us. But what's your first, like, do you remember your first, like, view of Leonard Nimoy, like, as a kid growing up watching Star Trek? Like, do you remember the first time?
So, like, I was a kid, a little boy, and my 10 years older brother and parents ran the TV. And I remember Lost in Space being on, but we never watched Star Trek. But I remember just being aware vaguely that there was some space show with a guy with pointed ears, just vaguely, you know? And then by the time I was in high school and I had my science teacher that shamed me into going home and watching because she couldn't believe I didn't watch, you know, after school.
Yeah.
And then just going, oh, okay. But getting it right off the bat and then just, you know, and then realizing later on, well, on their budget, this was the only way they could afford to have an alien to remind everybody they were in space all the time. it was a pretty cheesy, cheap, you know, physically, you know, old pointed ears and a bowl haircut and you give him a little bit of a yellowish. And when he bleeds, you kind of make the blood look green. You know,
yeah.
And, ooh, there's your alien, you know, on a small budget. But
I'm just so glad they didn't paint him red like they wanted to originally. Like, oh my gosh, that would have been bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank God they were still having to think of black and white TVs, you know, because red would have looked horrible in black and white contrast.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, but that was it. It was just that. And again, my biggest and getting it. Well, here's come the opening credits starring William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy. Well, okay, he's obviously one of the two leads or, you know, the second lead or whatever, second banana. But yeah, just I almost think from day one, so many people are like, oh my God, I love the character Spock, or the, you know, the female fans that would swoon, or the guys, or any science loving person who loves seeing science represented so well and rational thought and toleration and or the split nature of Spock, you know, half human, half Vulcan, and so many people identified with that mixed heritage or a heritage that got ridiculed sometimes or always having to speak up for his, you know, his part of his culture. That aspect of Spock, you know, even with his friends and everybody kind of ribbing him a little bit. At the same time, being a guy with flaws and interesting things and, you know, McCoy being able to needle him for his own good, kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But all those memes that came out just kind of going, well, yeah. It's just like just taking it for granted and going on down the list of looking out for some of the other aspects of Trek that didn't get as much attention, you know, that weren't on all the posters and T-shirts and lunchboxes and everything like Spock was. And it's almost like I was a person who, aside from like worshiping Spock or really enjoying in Leonard's performance mm-hmm. and him as a star, I was one that went, well, yeah, that's Leonard. That's Spock. Of course, that's where they are. It's cool. They're great. Okay, now let's move on. Which was not fair to them, but that's really what all came to me.
Oh yeah,
you know, when he passed. So that's kind of been, you know, like just lifelong. Spock has just always been like a constant there, like a foundational stone. And it didn't surprise, you know, it was kind of interesting how even the JJ movies were able to reach out and have that bridge. I mean, I know that in a commercial markety way, they were hoping to have that as a bridge to entice, you know, naysaying prior fans into coming and giving it a try. That's, you know, that's like Next Generation having McCoy in the pilot of Next Generation, exactly. You know, or having Picard in the pilot of DS9 and, you know, so on and so on. That's not a totally
passing the torch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And bridging people over and what they're used to into the new thing. But yeah, that's but it's been also been interesting. Like I was at Vegas last year at the convention and I just love talking to fans, especially people I don't know. And I can always tell because they've kind of got the wide-eyed tourist look sometimes.
First con anyway. Like it doesn't matter what it is. You're going to have that. You're going to have that. I remember my first big con. I was like, I have no idea where I'm going.
Well, I had a guy in his 50s because walking by and I, you know, just kind of I could tell he was, you know, whatever new. And I just said, you know, have you not been to I still think about people who go to their like local, you know, nearby conventions and then they save up and like going to Vegas is a big thing after a few years or something.
Yeah.
But there are tons of people who just make the leap. They get up out of their chair from years of watching at home. And the first thing they do outside their own home door is they go to Vegas. For the Vegas Con. And this was a guy, he said, nope, this is my first convention. And I went, wait, like he's, you know, he was in his 50s. And I go, wait, how long have you been a fan? Oh, I watched NBC original Star Trek in the 60s. And I went, you've gone almost 50 years as a fan and kept up with it. And you come to your, you know, and not just his first Vegas, his first convention, period.
Ever, yeah.
And I said, what happened? He said, it was Leonard passing. I said, really? And he said, yeah. He says, I just decided it was time. So it's like, you know, it's like it's amazing how – and that's just – I don't say superficial, but that's just a surface. I mean just – I know that Leonard's passing has made – not so much affected people, but made people reflect through a new – you know, a new filter or just, you know, just altered our
– perception.
You know, perception a little bit. Just changed the lens a little bit, you know, or changed it a few degrees and just like that guy. And we'll see, you know. But the fact that he's not going to go away, you know, anytime soon, his memory and honoring, as you were talking about already, about people honoring Leonard and honoring Spock. And Zach Quinto, I think, kind of knowing that he may even, if people appreciate his performance and think he's maybe the best person to have played Spock for this new iteration, but knowing that maybe he's going to do it three times, maybe four times, he's not going to spend, you know, his life will not be consumed with playing Spock and reacting to that for good and bad the way Leonard Nimoy was with that character. So, you know, even there, just everyone kind of, you know, just bowing down and appreciating the actor and the man as a man and what all he did with his life and then the character. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, lots of every, you know, Gene and Dorothy Fontana and everybody else who had a hand in adding to Spock. But, also, but you know, the core being Leonard after, you know, he picked up the first script and started to run with it. And it could have been so much of a joke. He was worried about it being a joke, you know, at the beginning. But not having it be a weird, wacko, you know, freak show thing and in turn making Spock believable and dramatic and giving him gravitas helped give the whole show gravitas and made it believable and respectable. And, you know, and the other actors had to rise to that bar too and then they were off and running, so...
Sure. And do you have any particular favorite Leonard Nimoy and or Spock moment from that enormous history?
See, I didn't really know Leonard that well close hand. My friend Bonnie Moss, who's a supporter of the Con of Wrath, who was actually there, she was an early fan of his and then collected some of his early photography. And here lately has worked with his archivist, and they did the show in North Carolina that got a lot of attention. And she's – I keep trying to get her to come to – she's been to Vegas a couple of times, but to do more. And she's been interviewed a few times. And she's someone that's like, you know, it's just colored every aspect of her life all the way through as a fan and as just an appreciator. Here I am. It's like I took Leonard for granted. I didn't go out of my way to see him at conventions if I passed. I never did an interview with him. I think he may be the only one in the original cast that I didn't do that. And I know so. And it would just be kind of fleeting. It's almost like I didn't want to go out of my way to be fanish around him. And I never had a working situation. You know, we set up interviews for other people when we did the magazine to talk. Yeah. So I'm sorry. I'm probably disappointing you here a little bit.
Well, but, it doesn't have to be in person or anything. Through the show. I mean, like anything that you like thought was.
Oh, yeah. I just think after I got old enough to realize it, just realizing with a little bit of distance and years, just how they made those early shows work, and to go back and read later on how worried he was. And you know what? It was when we did the first Star Trek Continues, and I got to sit and talk with Michael Forrest, who played Apollo, you know, in the original series on Who Mourns, and then played Apollo again in the first episode of Continues. And he was talking about being in a play with Leonard in New York when he went out to do the pilot or screen test or do the pilot for Spock for The Cage, and how he came back. He says, well, I'm going to do this science fiction, but you know, who knows then? And it's a pilot. You never know if a pilot's going to go or be picked up. He's like, well, they want me to come do this pilot, and it's this alien that's wearing pointed ears, and I'm afraid it's going to be laughable. And you know, it's just a couple of actors who are on their way up talking, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But Mike Forrest talking about how he came back, and he's like, well, how was it? And he says, well, it wasn't so bad, but, you know, who knows? No one's going to pick this thing up. It's not going to go anywhere, you know. What am I worrying about? No one's ever going to see it, you know. But, you know, funny. But just hearing stories like that and then and realizing just what he brought to it and how seriously they took it. And then how it was almost like he was damned for getting so popular out of the gate that it upset the early, you know, balance of power, a lead and a second banana and then everybody else in the cast, and how that was the way the salaries and the billing were all set up and how they got to the point where they had equal nations, you know, billing, and he and Shatner, and how it was rough at first and then how they got it smoothed over, and then how they've had their bumps up and down over the years. But it was him that said, hey, Bill, you should, you know, I've directed to, you should jump in and pull your favored nations, your equal status clause, and you should jump in and direct the next one. I mean, you know, just all those little wrinkles of life. And I said it before, the fact that we were sitting there watching him on Skype with this crowd in Florida after he had to quit traveling because of his COPD. Mm-hmm. And then it got to the point where he couldn't even talk like an hour for a standard, you know, 45 minutes to an hour slot, just because it got painful to talk after 10 minutes with his lungs. But just sitting there for the first time watching him entertain this whole crowd and having a woman at the queue at the little computer, you know, the line to talk to him on the little computer. And then we saw it on the big screen. And she said, one woman said, I'm as nervous talking to you like this as I would be if you were here live. You know, and just thinking, you know.
The reverence, you know.
You know, well, I'm just thinking, you know, like, Jesus Christ, here you are, Leonard, making history, you know, like breaking the box open wide open again, you know, doing this, you know, at your age and after all these years, and here's still something wacky new that I'm watching connected to Star Trek. I'm watching an appearance, you know, via thing, you know, simple, you know, and we've got the technology. No, like, that's no big deal.
Put it on the view screen.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Like, no.
Yeah, on viewer, Lieutenant. And
healing, you know, frequencies open.
Just some moments like that. Just some moments like that. But also that, and I mentioned some of these I mentioned already, but they really are what's kind of in my mind as you ask that. Watching him do the last live appearance at Vegas, not with Shatner, just by himself, and not even talking about Star Trek, but just kind of leading everybody through his life the way he wanted, you know, slides from when he was a little boy and when he was in high school and college and his other acting, and some things were kind of wacky, and some of his family and his background, and then what he's done lately that people don't may not know so much about, his photography and some of the art. And just know that whether you were a fan in that room, whether you were somebody bought your ticket, or you were running the convention, or you were another actor guest, or you were a dealer vendor, or what you were doing, everybody in that room, crammed into that room, there, I don't know who else was left in the whole, in the rest of the Rio at that moment, because everybody knew that was Leonard's last live show in Vegas, his last appearance, you know, his last talk. And no matter where you came from or what your status in life was, everybody in that room was a fan of Leonard Nimoy, and everybody was there to see his last live, you know, Vegas appearance. And that was kind of amazing and humbling and cool to have that memory. And then when he walked off and did his last, you know, Vulcan salute, his last live long and prosper before he left, that we were watching an end of it, you know, an end of an era.
Yeah, for sure. That's amazing. Thank you for coming on, sharing your thoughts and everything about Leonard Nimoy. I really appreciate it, and hoping this will be a nice, you know, memoir remembrance of him.
Yeah. Well, good luck with all of that, and so I hope good luck with the podcast growing, and you started this about the same time I started Portal 47. So let's hope we all do well and take the memory of Leonard and everything he brought to us and to Star Trek and everything that came after, and boldly go.
Oh yes, and definitely good luck with your Portal 47, and you know, peace and long life, Larry.
Okay, David. Thanks.
Have a good night.
Thank you all for listening. All my music was provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or follow them on Twitter at warp11. You can find us at synthaholics.com. You can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com, and you can follow us on Twitter at synthaholicduo. If you'd like to follow us individually, you can follow me at David_J_Duncan.
You can follow me, Aaron O'Brien, at Blackbird2004. Faith, where can they find you?
You can find me at Faith Hertzberg.
And please subscribe to us. We are on iTunes. We are on Stitcher. And if you have a chance, please rate and review so we can improve. And any feedback is welcome. And so we can make the show even better for you.
Live long and prosper, guys. Gazed at the stars, we did gaze. The next morning he left stinking of gin. Well, McCoy, my boy, come mix me a drink. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink. And we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
I ever got to meet, and he actually complimented me on my costume and gave me a hug, and like he was my idol before that, but like fell in love
even more so afterwards.
Mm-hmm. He was just so kind.
Yeah,
and that was just amazing.
I don't know, it's like for me, I'm trying to figure out how to get my phone so it won't make noise.
Oh, that's a really good idea.
Good ideas.
Sorry about that. I don't know. I don't know if we're recording yet or not.
Oh, no. We're just
we're just yakking.
We're yakking because that's what we do best. But I did want to keep it short because I didn't want to take you up for like 3 hours like we usually do. And